It's time for Microbrew Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. On the other line, Kurt Hoge. He's the Brewers reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And the Brewers did not do much at the winter meetings outside of introducing Jackson Churio on the new 8-year deal that we discussed on our last podcast. But, you know, there's plenty to talk about. There's Shohei Ohtani going to the Los Angeles Dodgers on a $700 million deal. That is not a number I have wrapped my arms around just yet. And we maybe got some slight hints about what to expect going forward, or at least we could speculate a little bit better than we could a week ago at this time. Kurt, I know you did not get a chance to go to Nashville, but I know you were following it pretty closely. What, Kurt, would you buy if you were given a contract worth $700 million? Tell me, Kurt.
The first thing that I would buy would
not be... Is it the Phoenix Coyotes?
Would not be a car, would not be a house. I would go to Aldi and I would buy out the entire freezer section of food. And then I would buy like 8 chest freezers and I would just, that's it. That's the first thing I would buy. I have a passion for all these frozen food options. Not everything, not absolutely everything, but a lot of things. And then you got to get some secondaries to go with it, like queso and other assorted condiments. But that would be the first thing I would do. Maybe get a couple of beverages there as well. Some $4 bottle of wine might pair well, for instance, with some of the tater tots and or hash browns. So, yeah, that'd be it. Maybe the chimichanga would go well with like a red wine or I don't know. That would be the first thing I would do. What about you?
Are you pairing chimichangas with red wine? Did I catch that correctly?
I'm not saying I have, but I was just thinking if I'm going to be buying wine from Aldi and frozen food, what maybe a sensible pairing would be. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's a ridiculous thing to say, but I think it might work.
I did not realize Aldi. I have to plead ignorance on Aldi. I know it's a lot of non-brand name food items, so I don't shop there. I don't know a lot about it. I have a very run-of-the-mill grocery life, so I am intrigued by this. I didn't know that there was such a delectable offering of frozen foods.
I don't think it's going to change your world if you're not if it's not a part of your regimen already. Maybe it would.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not coming out and saying it's the greatest thing of all time. But of all the things like that are a part of my life, a part of my regimen, Aldi frozen food is just good. It's good. It's fine.
Interesting.
And
all right,
it'd be on the schedule. So I don't know how many bags of frozen strawberries I could buy, but
yeah, I think you should first buy a house that can handle the electrical output that's going to be required for all those chest freezers you just bought. So yeah, make that step one.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, so I'll also need a U-Haul to yes, all the 9 chest freezers that will be in my basement.
I don't know if we're dreaming big enough quite yet on the $700 million, but I'm glad to see we've got some brainstorms here.
Well, you know, you got to start with something basic. Otherwise, you know, $700 million is a lot of money, but you still worry about, you know, you get too lavish right away, you run out of money.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. Yeah. What would I do? I'd pay off my house, my car. And man, Kurt, I have no inventive thoughts in my head.
The other thing I would do, JR, is I would, speaking of freezers, I would pay for new freezers at American Family Field.
You would fix the chillers. You would fix them.
Yes, I'd fix the chillers. And while I'm at it, you know what? I'll pay off the entire stadium renovation.
You're going to save the taxpayers so much money. Yes. Oh, my goodness. I want to talk a little more about Ohtani and just as it relates to a small market team like the Brewers, just briefly. But first of all, I want to start with Corbin Burns. That's still, I think, the main storyline of this offseason, what happens with Corbin Burns. And I know we've touched on it a little bit. We've seen a lot of different people mentioning him, national writers. A few, I would say, early in the winter meetings was a few were suggesting that, you know, it seems pretty likely that Burns gets dealt. And now toward the end here, a week later, you know, one report saying that the Brewers are definitely, or not definitely, but Bob Nightingale writing, he expects the Brewers to hang on to Corbin Burns and Matt Arnold, you know, for however deeply you can take a general manager's words, you know, he was saying, well, we're really happy to have him. And, you know, I think at this point, it's obviously it's going to come down to if there's a deal that really moves them to, what did Doug Melvin always say, that if they're motivated, or I'm not motivated to make a trade at this time. Yeah. So obviously it's going to come down to that. That's always been the case, but I don't know. I guess the deeper we get into the offseason, the more I think the Brewers might really try to keep him. And I don't know if the difference between what you could get for him at the trade deadline versus the offseason, I do think is of some notable quantity, but difference. But I don't know if it's enough that you would say you're going to subtract your greatest asset for 2024 in a very winnable division in a year where you're bringing back a lot of the talent that helped you win 92 games last year. I mean, we all agree the team needs upgrades, but this team is still situated fairly well to compete if they keep a guy like Corbin Burns. So the more I think about it, the more I'm like, well, maybe not. So how do you view this situation at this point with Corbin?
Well, first off, JR, shall we say, let Bob cook.
Bob Nightingale with an amazing column at usatoday.com. If you haven't read it, about the whole Shohei Ohtani thing and the baseball writing in general, man.
His report on Friday during Shohei Mania, you know, when everyone was under the impression Shohei was on a flight to Toronto, when he drops a haymaker out of the blue that Shohei's actually at home in L.A., was hook that report directly to my veins.
Oh, man, when that happened, who's on the plane then? What a wild turn of events.
There's some good conspiracy theories going on with that whole situation right now, which I'm also hooking to my veins. We don't need to get into all of those.
I think we should. We just can do it later.
Yeah, we can do it later. Let me say, I'm here for absolutely every single one of them. Yes. It makes this insane chaotic situation all the better. But anyway, yeah, to the Burns point, it's if you try reading into these national reporters' reports over the last couple of months, you're not going to read a single thing. It's been all over the place, really. I think off the bat, there was serious speculation from The Athletic about the Brewers would trade Burns, that rival executives were expecting them to go on full sale this offseason. That does not seem to be the plan at all at this point. You know, even if it is Burns or Adames, that's not full sale. Jeff Passan's early report was that, like, he did not expect the Brewers to trade Burns. He kind of waffled back on that a little bit, and now Nightingale is saying that he does not expect, or, you know, the Brewers aren't expected to trade Burns. So instead of trying to decipher what is between the lines there, let's look at the situation. And we've talked about this plenty, but it hasn't changed a whole lot. Like, the Brewers are in a really good spot if they want to trade him, but they don't have to. I've started coming around a little more on not trading him thinking about it in the last 24 hours, because, you know, it boils down to what kind of return could you get for him at the deadline. And also, the Brewers farm system is shaped up very well for the next 6 years of, you know, the impact on the big league side. Mm-hmm. So they're not in dire need of replenishing the farm as, you know, the Padres were with Juan Soto. It feels like a bit of a different situation than the Padres were. It is a bit of a different situation than the Padres were in with Soto, where he was 30-something million, and the Padres are taking out loans for payroll. Still going to have a high payroll, but cutting salary directly. That's not exactly where the Brewers are. They can trade Burns if someone's willing to pay. Like, I guarantee you, if the Dodgers dialed them up right now and said, Bobby Miller, Ryan Pepiot, Gavin Lux and like Josue De Paula. The Brewers are doing that deal right now. But if no one's going to pony up, they don't have to.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm just processing that deal in my head. Like, that'd be amazing. That would sound great.
That would be amazing, yes. And I think the Brewers would take less than that for sure.
Yeah.
Any deal Bobby Miller is in, and then you add another, you know, legitimate prospect / contributor, the Brewers should take that deal.
That deal won't happen because the Dodgers can't afford to part with pitching like someone like Bobby Miller, who was their de facto number one pitcher last year.
Interesting thing here is the Dodgers absolutely need pitching.
Yeah, but they're not alone. Like, I don't know how they're going to get a frontline pitcher for Corbin Burns.
Will they part with like the players the Brewers will want in order to give away Burns? Because the players that the Brewers are going to want are also going to be somewhat central to what the Dodgers are wanting to do this year. So that, you know, that'll throw those talks into a bit of a loop. And I just don't get the sense that the negotiations have taken any sort of like, I don't think they have advanced to any point that where the Brewers, to use the Doug Melvin phrase, feel motivated to trade Burns, because they don't have to. And they can hang on to him, wait till see what Snell happens with Snell, what happens with Yamamoto. Maybe someone gets desperate.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I guess I've been like scanning free agency lists lately, and the more I look at them, the more it's like there is no one here. And I'm not talking about just for the Brewers, just for any team. So I just got to think that teams are going to want to amp up their asking prices for a guy like Corbin Burns. But I don't think you ever get to a point where you're getting the pitching in return that can offset that loss. You know, if you could, you would. You would keep what you have at home. You have Corbin Burns. Like, you're not gonna get somebody that's got a higher ceiling than him. At least somebody who's big league ready, who's got a higher ceiling than him.
Let's run down some teams that would make sense to do it. Teams that have the prospect capital, the willingness to trade for a 1 year arm, and a need for a 1 year arm.
Yes, the Baltimore Orioles.
Well, yeah, we can skip this. We can skip the NL Central.
Yes, we can.
The Dodgers obviously make sense. The Diamondbacks made sense before they traded for Erod, or they signed Erod. Mm-hmm. The Padres, I could see it, but it wouldn't make sense considering they just replenished their system with arms. The Giants, potentially, but I don't know
if the Giants would be thinking in those terms. I feel like the Giants would be. They could certainly use it. I just don't know if they're looking for a 1 year option.
There is a bit of, I feel like there is a bit of urgency within the Giants as well, too. The Mets,
I think, don't re-sign them.
In the East, the Mets don't seem to be like fitting this 1 year rental mold right now. Like, they just seem to be, they were out on Soto. Marlins. What about the Marlins?
But if you're a team at the level of the Marlins,
maybe the Marlins are being run like the Rays now. Maybe the Kim Ng Marlins would do it. Maybe they would have some fun.
Yeah.
Maybe
we need to discuss the way the Rays are run, by the way. We've mentioned it before, but we're going to come back to that. Put a pin in the Tampa Bay Rays.
Okay, a pin in the Rays and conspiracies. Love that.
Yes, love it.
Great team. Probably no, they signed Nola. The Braves would make a lot of sense, but they only trade with teams when they fleece them, and the Brewers seem to be wanting to like be the fleecers here. So
yes, good luck.
So it gives us in the AL, look at the East, we got the Orioles for sure. The Orioles for sure, but except they haven't made any win now moves really. So potentially the Blue Jays I could see as a definite suitor. Suitor in the Blue Jays. The Yankees, why not? Why not the Yankees? The Red Sox, I could for sure see them getting desperate.
Okay, so the longer this list goes, the more it feels more likely to me. There are actual suitors out there.
There are actual suitors, but there's a bunch of teams on kind of like the fringe, like the Red Soxes of the world. And Well, actually, I think I only in the Giants. There's only like two teams in the NL that would make sense. But the AL, there's some more teams. The Twins, probably not. No one else in that division unless the Guardians got frisky, which they don't do that sort of thing. Astros, potentially. Rangers, potentially. Mariners, potentially, okay. But probably not. So maybe about 6 to 8 teams with like two or three of those making a lot of sense.
Okay. All right. Well, if that happens, I got to think you're going to see Blake Snell, Jordan Montgomery, some of these like upper mid-level pitching options sign free agent deals first. And then you're going to have the teams that didn't win out on those guys that are going to be a little bit, you know, a little bit more motivated to up the ante in a trade scenario. I'm gathering just from knowing what we've talked about both on and off mic that you do think it still is the prudent call at this point to trade Corbin Burnes. You think this is the absolute right time for the Brewers to do it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's contingent on getting the right offer for sure. But I think if the market comes around on him, then it is absolutely the right time to trade him. I think there's a way to pivot and still have a pretty good team next year. There's even with the great farm system and the prospects coming, if they have, there's just enough needs still, enough question marks that some more depth, some more young, talented depth could really help out in that regard.
Yes. Speaking of young, talented depth, the Brewers have a lot of it in the outfield. And we did talk about that, how the Jackson Chourio situation makes the outfield picture that much more crowded. It was a report that the Brewers were, you know, discussing their young outfielders because of course they are. They have too many of them. And you would think that if they are looking to upgrade and using the trade mechanism, they would have some pieces to do so in that department. One thing that surprised me was Matt Arnold kind of indicating that Christian Yelich would definitely not be moving to first base. That was not something that they've ever indicated would be on the table. It's just a natural, you know, something you'd look at just because he's an older guy relative to these other outfielders. Anyway, he has struggled at times on defense. You know, he doesn't have the strongest arm in the world. We know this. You would think because first base is conceivably the easiest infield position to learn that he could possibly move there or play primarily as a DH, which is obviously the greater likelihood. I'm surprised Matt Arnold kind of shot that down. I mean, it doesn't close the door, of course, but it doesn't seem like that's where they're headed. So now I'm back to wondering about a first baseman, and I would love to see this team get involved with Rhys Hoskins, but that's A, probably too pricey for them. B, he was hurt all last year, and C, is he that much better than just re-signing Carlos Santana? He's actually not that much better than just re-signing Carlos Santana. I don't know if
this is Rhys Hoskins slander.
Well, I would certainly rather have Rhys Hoskins personally if I were the Milwaukee Brewers, but it's not so much that you're going to want to pay, you know, a pretty sizable free agent deal, especially if you're the Brewers who don't want to pay any sizable free agent deals. So I don't know what they're going to do with the corners, man. And we keep bringing it up and keep talking about it. I legitimately I thought Jamer Candelaria made a lot of sense. The Reds signed him. He was one of the free agents. He's one of the free agents that has gone off the board 3 years, $45 million, not completely unreasonable, but that's a lot of money for what you're going to get from Jamer Candelaria. So help me out, Kurt. I'm still trying to imagine what the options really are at the corner spots where they really, really struggled offensively. And I don't know if I have a good answer for this team.
Let's go through, let's read some names.
Yes, that is what this podcast is for, to read names.
Read names. And then theoretically, one of them will be right about because we read it off.
That's right.
Why does Fangraphs not want to let me filter for, okay, here, corner infielders. Cody Bellinger. Someone's going to regret the contract they give Cody Bellinger.
I'm going to say that's a stay away from that.
They might regret a Matt Chapman contract, although the median prediction on Fangraphs appears to be 4 and 80. That to me is better than giving Cody Bellinger like 7, 170 or whatever the heck he's going to get. Jeimer Candelaria was the number three corner infielder on here. I don't hate the deal. I think the Reds overpaid a little bit, but I hate it. I just don't like the fit there at all with the Reds. The fit on the Brewers would have made a lot more sense. They're going to give him $15 million a year. Brandon Belt, interesting name.
I agree with that. That is an interesting name.
Carlos Santana. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pull up some Hobbs on some of these guys.
Gold Glove first baseman, Carlos Santana. Gold Glove finalist, anyway.
Gold Glove finalist, that's right, yes.
Yeah.
The only Gold Glove finalist on the best defensive team in the National League.
It's wild.
Hobbs does not love Brandon Belt.
Again, Hobbs is the metric that you have cultivated attempting to forecast offensive production going forward. Had a pretty good success rate. You know, it's easy for us to say. I know some of that's just been you tracking it, but pretty good success rate and doesn't love Brandon Belt. Sad.
He's been more successful at predicting the next year's weighted on base average than the previous year's expected weighted on base average. So that's pretty good. Also, it's better at predicting next year's WOBA than the previous year's WOBA is. So yeah, not bad. Although there's definitely some misses with him.
I think the problem is after Belt, it gets really, really. You're talking about 30-year-olds who are just okay. G-Man Choi is one of the names that's going to come next, or shortly thereafter. Garrett Cooper, Donovan yes. Solano.
Donovan Solano is actually a very intriguing name to me.
Okay, I'm listening.
Well, first off, Hobbs loves him, ranked 52nd among hitters with 200 plate appearances last year. Right in between, right around Bryce Harper, next Kepler, Adolis Garcia. So, like, the underlying skill there is good. And sure, he's turning 37, but he can play multiple spots. And I believe he has always hit lefties.
Okay.
Donovan Solano has been a sneaky good hitter.
Okay. That's good. You know, it's probably going to require that a lot of teams pass on him for the Brewers to get involved in a free agency battle of any sort. But maybe that's still the price range where they'd be willing to get involved earlier.
Yeah. 110 OPS plus last year. Over the last 5 years, 110 OPS plus.
Okay.
Hitting 300. So not a ton of slug in there. It doesn't give the Brewers the slug that they need. But, I think that's very... That'd be a very cost-effective one-year deal.
We're operating under the premise that free agency is how they address this. Is that practical? Is it more a guy in the system? Is it a trade? Like, because first base has never felt like a priority for the organization. It's a little unfair, maybe, to say that, but you know they've often tried to find guys that were. You know, the Rowdy Tellezes of the world, the guys that people counted out.
That's how you end up with replacement level production every year for 15 years.
Absolutely. Right.
Aside from this, that was Jesus Aguilar and Eric Thames slander almost every year for 15
years. Well, sure,
years.
But look at Aguilar and Thames. I mean, total unconventional additions. Right. You know, they did not head on address first base.
Yeah. A name I'm curious about is Emmanuel Rivera from the Diamondbacks. He seems out of like, what is his role going to be on that team? They just traded for Suarez. He's young, but and had some flashes, but you know, it hasn't all been there in the first couple of years. And some of the underlying numbers are really interesting with him. So I'll throw that one out there for a third base trade possibility off the top of my head, maybe.
Yeah.
Justin Turner's on here. Oh, baby.
I mean, Justin Turner at this point is one of the top third basemen available, quite honestly.
Yes. You know,
there's Matt Chapman, obviously.
Well, does Justin Turner still play third base? Is that it? Did he play third base at all this year?
I think so. I think he did.
The problem if you sign a guy like that that has to play a lot of DH is, like, you don't have a lot of, like, free DH at-bats. As a wise man once said, we just don't have a lot of at-bats at the DH position.
It does look like DH was his top listed position last year. So that is primarily where he's headed.
I mean, there's still an argument for Justin Turner. Like at some point it's going to fall off a cliff. And that point could very well be this year. He just turned 39 17 days ago. Heavy belated Justin Turner. But I mean, this contact rates are still really good. The power's not terrible. He hit 23 homers this year. The walks have gone down a bit, and that was always one of the great things with him with his plate discipline. But, like, I mean, like, yeah, he's projected by Steamer for a 105 WRC plus, but only one win. I just don't think the name brand there is going to lead to some team paying more than the Brewers want to pay for him.
What about pitching? They re-signed Wade Miley since we last chatted. We know already added Colin Ray. Those are not going to wow people because these guys were already here, but that does bolster their depth at the very least. Wade Miley probably more so than depth, but they won't have Brandon Woodruff this year, which was the case list last year, but you could see them entertaining, I think, at least an upgrade somewhere in that starting rotation or an addition in that starting rotation.
I could see an addition for sure. Yeah. Like a Brett Anderson type. I know Wade Miley and Brett Anderson are not totally different, but they are in terms of like expected performance, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, no Brett Anderson type of like a number four, number five guy who can eat some innings. The difficulty though is like in addressing that via free agency is you're sort of locking that person into a roster spot all year in a rotation spot. Whereas there are maybe better, like just easier ways to get a cast off from some other organization's, you know, depth.
Right.
That you can yo-yo up and down along with like Robert Gasser and,
yeah,
and whatnot. Yeah, but I for sure would expect to see another addition to the rotation.
Sure. Yeah, Gasser, Aaron Ashby, who might be healthy by the start of the year.
That's the big question. That's my greatest question mark, I think, around this team, other than if Corbin Burnes is here, in terms of performance, because as we have discussed on the pod before, I've been a big Ashby believer in just the stuff and the potential, but boy, shoulder injuries and that shoulder injury and the way like the Vila was at the end of last year in the minors, I just don't know what you can bank on. But if he's legitimately healthy, who's to say that's not a 3-win starting pitcher?
Yeah, I agree with you.
That could be the Brandon Woodruff replacement.
Yes, but Brandon Woodruff had a track record of success. I mean, Aaron Ashby has flashed, but I would not classify him as a consistent success.
Not on like a per rate base or per inning basis or per batter basis. Sure, but like Brandon Woodruff was worth a couple wins this year just because he wasn't available much. He was worth a couple wins last year because he wasn't available a whole lot. That is the one thing that is sort of the silver lining with missing Woodruff is the rotation without him is still excellent. And they're bringing possibly everyone back.
And possibly everyone in the bullpen for the most part, you know, like they're not going to, they're going to be a lot of familiar faces back in the bullpen. Yeah,
the bullpen is, they're going to sign Joe Ross. I expect that to be announced this week. I think Joe Ross is a bullpen arm, like the Bryce Wilson model. Maybe can start. I just don't think the Brewers are signing him to be a starter. And you add Ross to the pen, and there's what, like 9 guys, and how many of them have options? Uribe, Hobie still has an option, although I'm not sure what his service time clock is at. So he might be able to turn down an outright assignment. He'll be more.
It's great radio where you can hear us typing.
He's at 4 years of service time, so he could not decline an outright service time. So Hobie Miller has an option. Elvis Piguero has an option. Other than that, am I missing anyone? They're all out of options, right?
Devin Williams. Think so. Yes, Devin Williams.
So yeah, like they have a stable of dudes back there, and it is really rare to see a bullpen that good all just be literally all be back the next year. And then you add Ross to the mix too. Probably not a need for any more free agents in the pen.
I would think not. And there's, you know, possibly plenty of possibilities in the depth in the AAA, AA level that they could fill some spots with. Speaking of which, I want to talk about catcher a little bit because Victor Caratini, as expected, is not coming back next year. He signed a reported, or I think it's official now, 2-year deal with Houston. Good for him. Got paid, deserved it, played pretty well in a backup capacity. They don't really have catchers now. They got William Contreras, who is my new favorite social media personality, as he has proven.
The Joker. I'm calling him the Joker.
Yeah, he's having a good time.
He was joking.
They need to sign him to an extension. But he's obviously the primary catcher. And then you've got a lot of question marks. And I don't know if you think Jefferson Caro is going to be ready to play on the big league team. I think it might be.
Not right away, no.
Yeah, and I don't know if you want him as a backup. You know, like obviously you expect William Contreras to be here a few more years for sure. But I don't know if you want to start Jefferson Caro as just kind of sitting on the bench when he's got a lot of development to go. And there's no one else, like almost literally no one else that you can look at other than maybe AAA catcher Brian Navarreto, who's got 5 big league games to his ledger, you know, with the Marlins in 2020. He did okay, I guess. Like, you know, didn't wow anybody at AAA in terms, at least offensively. So I presume, Kurt, that they're going to sign a veteran backup catcher to bridge some of this gap until Jefferson Caro is ready to take on a greater role. But I don't know if there's someone I'm forgetting about. Like, what's the process for catcher, do you reckon?
Yeah, I think the plan will be bring in a veteran. You know, there are some guys here. There are some names. Roberto Perez, Mike Zunino, Tom Murphy.
Okay.
Luke Maley signed. Tucker Barnhart. Like, there are dudes that can exist as a fine backup catcher. And then just as a placeholder for Carroll, I think Carroll will probably be big league ready at some point this year.
And oh, really? Okay.
I don't think there's any problem with, like, in August, having him as the backup catcher, catching twice a week. The defense is so good. It's like,
yeah,
it's not like, I mean, J.R. Austin Hedges got $4 million today.
Austin Hedges, good.
He's a better hitter than Austin Hedges is right now.
I mean, just truly bad offensive.
And players. With Hedges,
these are bad offensive.
You know, Hedges on the wrong side of 30, like that is insane to me, but. There's just a bajillion backup catchers that if you just want a good defender, you could sign Tucker Barnhart or someone like that. I don't think Brian Navarreto is a terrible backup catcher option either. I think he works well with, like, I don't know super much about it, but I believe he works well with pitchers and the Brewers like his defense as well. So maybe that ends up happening. They signed him to a, you know, they re-signed a minor league deal right away. So he could, you know, maybe it's just a bunch of minor league guys and see who wins the job out of camp. I think the most fun name the Brewers could sign in free agency that would make some actual sense is Mitch Garver. I think Mitch Garver is my this year Justin Turner.
Okay.
I
love that. I love that.
I mean, he DHs a lot. He can catch, but he is a good enough hitter to DH. The man hits dingies. He's already 33.
Could he play a little first base? I don't quite know.
I don't know. Tell him, Wash.
It's incredibly hard.
Maybe he can. But he's Fangraphs has him 2 years, $20 million projection.
Are you serious? They should do that. So,
I mean, Mitch Garver was I feel like he was a very good hitter on a very good team last year. He won a World Series ring. Let's see.
Yeah.
The strikeouts, he's been managing those under a quarter of the time. Hit 270, 500 slugging. Now, you're probably not going to get the 138 WRC plus again. But there's no reason to think you can't get an 800 OPS from him.
For sure. That is definitely a name I like. It would preclude Christian Yelich from DHing a lot. So that would
be an unconventional time or an unconventional ad. The thing is, like, I feel like Yelich is still good enough in left field that you don't want him, like, as a regular DH.
I 100% agree with you.
It's kind of admitting defeat, right?
Yes, I agree with you. It's just that the guys they have are younger and better defensively. And if they are going to be on this team, they make more sense in left field. But you're right. Yeah. Christian Yelich is not a dog in left field. He's fine. No, he's great. He's fine. Well, not great. He's good. He's good enough.
He's fine. He's only 32. Happy birthday to him, by the way. Belated last week.
Yep.
Yeah, Catcher could probably use an upgrade, but I also think like it just doesn't matter a whole lot when you've got Wild Bill Contreras. But then again, also, I've watched a lot of football today. It's NFL Sunday, and I saw a lot of teams that are reaping what they sowed on the backup quarterback position, both good and bad. Like the Bengals are reaping Jake Browning, who's apparently good. By the way, Jake Browning aside, I was sitting with Adam McAlvey at the airport bar in Denver, I believe. No, not Denver, okay. Somewhere else. And he offered me $100,000 if I could name the Bengals backup quarterback. This was like the middle of the summer.
Okay.
And I knew it was the former Washington quarterback in my head, but I couldn't remember his name.
That's so terrible.
I came so close to $100,000 from
Brock Heward. Is it Brock Heward?
McAlvey. I couldn't even guess but I knew it. I knew it was
AJ McCarron. Apparently now,
this has been your Jake Browning aside. But anyway, yeah, the Brewers like backup catcher doesn't super matter, but also if William Contreras like the Brewers had incredible health and some of that's luck from their catchers this last year. No IL days from the catcher spot is remarkable. Would not bank on that again. So, yeah, probably actually it is kind of important. They should sign someone.
Yeah, I agree.
What a world that was to that conclusion.
Speaking of interesting things happening in airports, let's pull out one of our pins and talk a little bit more about Shohei Ohtani.
Yes.
Or Shark Tank's Robert, is it Hurjevec? I don't watch Shark Tank, but
I don't know. Canadian, my wife loves Shark Tank, so I have watched a lot of Shark Tank.
Yeah, I don't know the guy's name, but Robert Hurjevec, the guy whose private plane everyone was tracking because they were under the impression it was Shohei Ohtani. Obviously, the Shohei Ohtani sweepstakes were fascinating for a while, and it is very cool that a player is as good as he is. You know, Juan Soto also has been traded to the Yankees since we last spoke, and there's maybe a little bit of conversation about whether this is good for baseball or not. I guess I find myself feeling a little defeated on this front a little bit. Like it's cool that he gets paid all this money. He deserves to be one of the, you know, landmarks, greatest players that this game has ever seen. But you know, the Brewers like legitimately, and this isn't like an owner being cheap or whatever, like legitimately cannot make that work. They cannot sign a player to a $700 million deal. They can't even be in that ballpark.
Yeah.
And Juan Soto, like going to the Yankees, like the rich just get richer in this game. And teams like the Brewers need everything to go perfectly, even to have a chance. And that's if they did their offseason correctly. And if they spent a little bit of money, I don't know how they're supposed to compete with this.
you raise good points.
Other than it is random at the end of the year and a team like the Diamondbacks can get in. You just gotta be good enough to be in that position and then lucky when you get there.
No, like frustration is certainly warranted if you're frustrated by this. I think there will be people that will make the argument of like, well, every team could do it. And maybe that is true. Maybe the Brewers financially could give Shohei Ohtani $40 million a year over the next 10 years and then defer another $300 million and be paying him, you know, until we're all dead. But the reality is they're not going to.
Well, and let me stop you there because, okay, even in the scenario where that is even remotely feasible, it would have to be more than that because LA is LA and he's just going to stay in Southern California. You have to go higher and the small market teams cannot go higher.
Yes, exactly. Although I think Shohei Ohtani might enjoy Milwaukee. I think he would, you know, the low key seemed to be a big part of his life. And I think he would just love the deal of the local Milwaukee media. Honestly, the Brewers should have made that part of their pitch to him. But
your picture, they should have a picture of you and Adam McAlvey and Steve McGargy from the AP. Like, here is our media team, Todd Rosiak, of course. Here is the New York media team, and there's 75 people on a wall.
Yeah, right, exactly. But my point about the owners is like, it's not an appeal to authority, but to say like the reality of the situation is the reality. Like, sure, the Brewers probably could have afforded an Aaron Judge contract. But the reality is they are never going to pay an Aaron Judge contract because of the market constraints that they are in and those that they maybe also put on themselves. It doesn't matter for the fan or the baseball observer whether or not the Brewers can pay Judge and choose not to, or they can't and they never will pay someone like that. The end result is the same. They will never have access to a certain level of player on the free agent market. And that inherently is a bummer. Like, just as a baseball fan, that could be frustrating. It can be disappointing. Now, the great thing about the game is there's so many other ways to win. There's so much randomness involved at the end of the year that you can win without him. Although, tangent to the tangent is that teams with low payroll do not win the World Series. Like, it just hasn't happened in the last 20 years. I don't know if that's an aberration or if that's, you know, part of the model. Like, at the end of the year, the big teams end up winning. But any way you spin it, like, the Brewers just are never going to be players in this, and that's the way baseball's set up, and it's not going to change, but that doesn't mean it can't be, like, at least somewhat frustrating. And then you can look at the Padres too, right? The Padres punching above their weight, spent so much money, and now, like, while the interesting thing is, while that was happening, like, in the lead up to last year's offseason craze, when the league could kind of smell, like, they traded for Soto, the league could kind of smell like, oh, they're about to go buck wild, extend Machado, sign Bogarts, extend all their guys, extend Darvish. People around the Brewers were like hinting at, like, I don't think this is going to last very long. I don't know anything about the situation, but that's just how it works. And they were right. It's they still have these guys under contract extension, so they're going to be paying, but, like, clearly they're peeling back a bit now.
Yeah, so you said there were conspiracy theories that you had floating around. Give them to me. Come on.
What did I see today? I've just seen a couple on the Twitters. One is that Robert Herjavec, Herjy Jerky,
the Shark Tank guy.
The Shark Tank dude is a agent of CAA, or not, his agency is CAA. Okay. Do you know what Shohei Ohtani's agency is?
Is it CAA?
Nothing else it is. Nothing else in this entire thing leaked except, like, two things. What were those things? Okay. Shohei met in Dundee, Florida to see the Jays' new facilities.
Yes.
And Shohei was near a decision and going on a flight to Toronto.
Okay.
I'm not saying there's any credence to it, but I'm
saying both those things might be lies.
It's probably all false, but what if it's not? I'm
lost on this conspiracy theory. I don't know what we're conspiring for here.
Well, the conspiracy is that this was all lined up to get the Dodgers to pay more money.
Oh,
it was the Dodgers the whole time. There's various lines of conspiracy. So I have another conspiracy that I'll get to later.
I see. So Robert Herjavec knowing people would track it.
This is the agency side of the conspiracy, right? Okay. They had these leaks planted. And these are the only things that got out the entire time to increase the scare that the Jays were a real possibility. You know, put the word out there of the Jays, you know, he was seriously considering them. And then have the inside man, the Shark Tank man, the CAA's own Robbie to take a private jet when it's reported Shohei's going to be on a flight.
Uh-huh. Making the Dodgers feel like, oh no, he's on his way to Toronto.
And then we have to pay $700 million.
I love
just to get that extra money from him. That's one theory. Another theory I've seen is that the Dodgers were planting the leaks about the Jay stuff because they were starting to get worried. And they so they wanted to make it make the Jays look like they were, you know, there's the whole thing about if leaks get out, it'll be held against teams.
Sure.
So the Dodgers were texting John Morosi.
Trying to sabotage Toronto.
Yes. Yes. Oh, he's at Dundee. He's the reason that the Jays GM's not at the winter meetings is because they're meeting with Shohei in Florida.
Yes, so I was concerned about him missing.
Those are my two conspiracy theories. They make life more fun, but also you got to be very careful about how far you go with some conspiracy theories.
Yeah, I think it's more likely so that the simpler
quarterback is touting them.
Yes, I think it's more likely that the simpler answer is the answer. But I am always willing to go for a ride on a good conspiracy theory. Before we shut this down, I wanted to unpin another subject, and that's how the Tampa Bay Rays are run. We mentioned this briefly before. Matt Arnold came from Tampa Bay. He's now, of course, the general manager of the Brewers, and Tampa Bay runs a pretty interesting ship. They don't hang on to players for long, but they are so good at player development that they are constantly competing at the upper echelons of the league. I mean, I think most every team would love to be in their situation in the regular season. The problem is it hasn't cashed in the postseason. And it's a little bit unsatisfying if you're a fan, because the Rays, you know, don't really cultivate long. Their players just aren't around that long. So you're always kind of looking for the next deal, and guys are going to be traded probably a year early in many cases. Or, I mean, you know, like Tyler Glasnow, for example, has long spent more time with Tampa Bay than the average player. And he's on the trading block here this offseason. So it's a little unsatisfying, but it ultimately gets results, and it requires really good player development. The Brewers are in a position now where they have seen some success at the minor league level. And I don't know, it feels a little like Tampa Bay to me. Now, the Brewers, I'm sure, will push back against that, because they have a much more rabid fan base than the Tampa Bay Rays do. So I'm sure they don't want to alienate anybody and make it sound like that's their plan. But what do you think of that? Like, first of all, I mean, if you're a diehard baseball fan, you kind of love the idea of a team constantly, you know, finding a way to being that successful over a long period of time, but it also doesn't have a World Series ring, and it isn't the most satisfying fan experience. So, like, give me your thoughts on that.
I feel like there was a clear shift in how maybe not all baseball fans, but like a significant contingent of like diehard baseball fans, the way that they like consume and like desire for teams to be operated. I feel like there was a shift somewhere in the last 5 to 8 years, where it went from like what the Rays are doing, like that model is really cool, to please, dear God, stop trying to hang money for wins above replacement banners and go buy me players that I like so we can win.
Mm-hmm.
I say that, and then part of me that like grew up in this era of, you know, maximizing wins, like that, I feel like that's the money. It's kind of stems from Moneyball. It took on a life of its own a little bit, but like I grew up in, as a, you know, I grew fell in love with baseball in like the Moneyball era, right? So in my mind, kind of was like, this is the way that you run a team, and that's the way you win games. So part of me is still like, you got to be careful in free agency, because there's a lot of not good deals out there. Like, I'm not sure the Jaime or Candelario deal makes a whole lot of sense for the Reds. But on the same hand, I think the way, what kind of what's behind what you're saying is like, you're not, the way the Rays are run wins a lot of games, but you're not seeing it in the most, or like viewing it in the most respectful light, right?
Right.
That's like exactly you kind of side eye it a little bit when you're talking about it. That's why you bring it up.
It feels very mechanical, robotic almost, you know, finding the perfect. And I don't want to be somebody who's like, you know, I always cringe when people are like, analytics are evil, but like, it truly feels like the Rays are run using spreadsheets, right? It's successfully so.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was great that they went out and signed Zach Eflin last year. Like, That was an awesome moment of the analytics and the pitch design people and like the coaching staff getting together and seeing like we can sign this guy to a multi-year deal. Like one of the higher pitchers on the market went to Tampa. That was cool. It would be awesome for the game. It doesn't have to be like Milwaukee and Tampa and whoever signing the Blake Snells, but more players like that. I can't think of like a good comp, like Mitch Garver, more players like that in this market. Like when the Brewers went and got Yasmani Grandal. I think that's really good for the game. It's really good for fans in Milwaukee. I don't know. Sure, Brian Anderson for $4 million might be mathematically correct on half a win, but it absolutely does nothing to move the needle and generate interest around your baseball team.
Yeah, so we'll see if they do dip their toe in a little bit. You know, we're still learning a little bit about Matt Arnold's style on how he's going to run the team.
I do think JR that not trading Corbin Burnes would be a huge step in the direction of like not the Brewers race. Doing things in their own way.
I agree with that. Yeah, so that's an interesting little referendum point, I guess, if you want to look at it.
It isn't that the Brewers front office doesn't want to win. That's not even close. Like, they want to win very, very badly. That's the personality and the persona of these dudes. And maybe that manifests itself in them deciding we're not trading him.
Yep. Sign Mitch Garver, Rhys Hoskins. Don't trade Corbin Burnes. And suddenly we're talking about one of the best teams of the National League,
that
man.
That team is the favorite in the National League Central.
By far,
for sure. The favorite. For sure. And it costs you, I don't know, Garver for $12 million a year this year, Hoskins for, I don't know what it costs, 17, 18 mil, maybe?
I was going to say 15, but that does sound conservative. 17 is probably more accurate there. Yep. And then you're in good shape. Sign a backup catcher, and we're good to go. It's so easy, Kurt. Why don't we just do it?
Congratulations. We have finished the offseason.
We solved it. We did it.
We did it.
We'll have to look ahead a little bit at how, you know, once some of the pieces fall into place, which teams, if any, we think can compete with the Brewers for the National League Central. I mean, obviously they're, you know, the Cubs and Reds were decent at points last year, and the Reds have a lot of great young talent. So we'll be looking at that as we head deeper into the offseason. And of course, as moves are made, we'll probably hop back on here and have another episode of Micro Brew. No guarantee it'll be next week, but we'll get on here when we can. Kurt, any last thoughts before I let you go? You off to Aldi?
Hold on. My agent's calling me. I gotta get on a flight. See ya.
All right. He is Kurt Hoag, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Everything he's got, and Todd Rosiak, his colleague, jsonline.com. They will keep you updated with what's going on. I am JR Radcliffe, and thanks for listening to this edition of Micro Brew. We'll be back with you again very soon. Bye bye, everybody.